Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
On the 4th of November 2019, we lost Gay Byrne. He may have stepped down as presenter of The Late Late Show years before, but he was still a very busy man, presenting his Sunday jazz programme on Lyric FM, filming The Meaning of Life for RTE and chairing the Road Safety Authority. But there was one thing he wanted to do, and that was to perform a one-man show, telling showbiz tales and being a raconteur before his beloved audience. Tomorrow, Bank Holiday Monday at 5pm, there'll be a special programme featuring Gay here on RT Radio 1, which was recorded at the Civic Theatre in Tallaght during a one-man tour in 2012. Well, with me now are his daughter Susie Byrne and his longtime friend and collaborator John McColgan. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thank you for having us, Miriam.
Listen, I'll start with you, John. I think it's you we've got to thank for this programme in more ways than one, for recording the show back in 2012 and making the programme now through Tyrone Productions. But I gather you badgered Gay to do a show in the style of Dave Allen. Why
was
that?
Yes, I've been saying to him for ages, because over the years, we had Gay and I and friends were at many social gatherings. And a Gay would do a turn or would be pressed upon to do various turns. So he did Cecil Sheridan parodies and he told stories which were hilarious. And I would say to him, you should do your own show. Don't be silly. Don't be ridiculous. I couldn't do that. So he was always not wanting to do it. And eventually I tied him down and he said, get me a scriptwriter. So he got a very good scriptwriter. And I presented it to him in the Westbury Hotel and I showed him the script and he was silent for about 15 minutes looking at it. He said, no, it's not me. It's not my voice. I'll write it myself. So he did.
Wow.
And I was anxious that at his age, two 50-minute parts of the show, that he would remember everything. So we had the stories and little bullet points on the side on a card. And after a couple of shows, he didn't need them. He remembered the two 50-minute parts absolutely from quite an incredible feat. But the best thing was he loved it. He loved being out there. His timing was impeccable. He loved the audience responding to him. In the opening of the show, we played the television sig and the radio sig, and the last line was, ladies and gentlemen, to whom it concerns, your host, Gay Byrne. And he'd walk out and the audience, there was a standing ovation before he started. So he really enjoyed the tour. But just to be clear about this, he called it a one-man show with a woman and he really wanted Kathleen in the show with him. So Kathleen read poetry and that went really well. I mean, she's a beautiful reader, beautiful voice. But they enjoyed touring Ireland. It was like the fit-ups.
Susie, do you remember that when your mum and dad started going out?
Oh, I do. Yes, yeah. They really did enjoy the touring. And I think it was time together. And the fact that Dad, as John said, was meticulous about the timing and meticulous about the content, he knew the show inside out and backwards. Therefore, he was very relaxed going on tour. And he also insisted that they stayed in 300 or 400 seater theatres.
Right, that's right.
And he always would say, you know, give me a full house with 300 people rather than get it up into another size theatre where you might have empty seats or there's a stress. So they knew going to every show that it was sold out.
Yeah.
And everyone that was going to be there wanted to be there. So they had great fun and even the banter between the two of them, because they both worked in show business and all of our lives, they had this banter going on and they worked so well together that Mum would, like, she would be texting me throughout the show saying it's a great audience or it's this, it's quiet or it's, but generally it was a fantastic audience. So, and her break that she gave him in the show in the second half was wonderful for him, because once she was on her 10 minutes, then he knew he was on the home stretch and it was a successful show. So he really did. They really enjoyed it.
They enjoyed it.
They did.
Kathleen says this herself. Kathleen is the queen of texting. and all of that. And she's he likes to quiet before he goes on. Mm-hmm. So they had to have separate dressing rooms so that she could text to her heart's content and he could get ready in another room.
Yes,
good thinking.
Yeah, he always wanted to be on his own, to just go through the show
in his head
all the time, whereas she was much more relaxed because she only had a little bit to do in the second half.
And there was a story from the grain store in one night, wasn't there? He was quite nervous.
Yeah, well, it was down in Ballymaloe. It was, I think, quite early in the touring, and the weather was horrendous, really horrendous. And the storm, a very stormy night, and they were looking out, they were thinking, who is going to come out on a night like that? It's just, so they kind of, I think, had allowed themselves to think, look, if people come, they come, if they don't, they don't. And with that, the car lights started coming up the driveway of Ballymaloe, and it was full house, and it turned out to be one of their most memorable
gigs.
And I think they did Ballymaloe a few times, but the first time they did it, when this dreadful, dreadful night, was wonderful. And the audience were there. They were up for it. They'd come out in the rain and they'd done it. It was great.
Isn't that amazing, John? I mean, it's Susie's dad, but you knew him a long time as a producer as well. That despite all his success, he was still worried that people wouldn't turn up.
Oh, his first question he would ask me was, how are the tickets going there? And I said, it's sold out. Don't be lying to me. It's not. I said, it is. It's sold out. So the first question, he wanted a full house. And as Susie said, he didn't want to go to larger theatres in case there wouldn't be a full house. But there were full houses all the time. And interesting mix in the audience. There were young women who were bringing their mother to see the legend that was Gay Byrne. And then after the show, Gay was very kind to all. He would sign autographs and talk to them. And they couldn't believe that they were seeing him in the flesh. And there were these venues all around the country, small venues that got a chance to see the legend live.
And of course, Gay, he didn't want to record it, John. Sure, he didn't for TV. But later on, maybe he thought perhaps he should have. So this is actually quite an exclusive bit of Gay.
It is, because I was trying to persuade him to do a television version of it. And he can be cranky at times or obstinate. He said, no, I don't want to record it. And I said, why not? Just don't want to record it for television. So I said, well, it's up to you. And then we recorded the audio. He knew we were doing it, but we weren't sure what we were going to do with it. And then over the last couple of years, when he wasn't well, I said, that was a big bad call you made there, not recording that show. I know, we should have done it. But he didn't want to, and I understand that. But I'm sure that people around the country will have never seen or heard this side of Gay. And tomorrow night at 5 o'clock on RTE Radio 1, you will hear Gay, the stand-up comic, being brilliant.
Now we're going to hear a clip from it, John. Here's Gay describing how he used to warm up the audience for the Late Late Show himself.
I did my own warm-up every night on the Late Late Show for all of those years. I just talked to the people before we went on the air, and it was a way of settling them down, because I suppose 85% of people who came to the studio audience of the Late Show had never been in a television studio, never ever in all their lives. So it was a way of settling them down, and I talked to them for 15 minutes. But these are the boom microphones. Those are the television monitors. This is the floor manager. The director is up there. And well, what happens? What, you know, generally speaking. So I'm doing this one night, and normally we have a bit of fun with it and so on. And I'm talking to me exactly as I'm talking to you now, precisely the same. And I'm here, and the first row is there. And I'm talking to, and the woman directly in front of me in the third row yawns. Right in my face. Right, my mom, I'm in full, and she goes, and being the smart aleck I am, I looked at her and I said, I'm terribly sorry. Am I keeping you awake? And she said, yes, but only just.
That's lovely to listen to, Susie, isn't it?
It is, and I loved, Cronin and myself were very lucky when we were children. We went in and out to RTE an awful lot, and I always loved his warm-up. I thought his warm-up was so funny, and so it was a part, I suppose it was a part of him that you never saw unless you were in the studio, but it really was very genuinely very funny, and the banter with the audience and just making them feel comfortable and look at yourself there now, give yourself a good wave there, because and look how stupid you look when you wave, so please don't when we're live on air, etc. So it was great, it was wonderful.
That's right, he loved comedians and he loved comedy, he loved stand up. I mean, he loved the Billy Connollys and the Peter Ustinovs and the Dave Allens, and he really laughed. They loved appearing with him because he understood comedy and he loved it, and they felt that he was the best interviewer, and all of them would have said that they ever had when they were telling gags. And that's why I thought he had it in his bones to stand up and tell stories. And eventually he did, and he was brilliant.
And the shows would often run longer, wouldn't they, if Gay was enjoying himself?
Yes.
And the audience were happy there at the one-man show?
Well, I had to say to him at one point, about three-quarter way through the tour, Gay, it starts at 8. You know, last night you finished at 10 past 11. And I said, it's a bit long. Oh, really? I know, I was enjoying it. I said, I know you were, but people have to catch buses and things, and it's just about 10 minutes too long. All right. But he was so enjoying himself. And of course, the audience would have stayed all night.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Susie, your dad had a remarkably good ear for accents, didn't he? Like, he was
did.
A good mimic.
He did. He was a wonderful storyteller. And in the programme, you can hear there's lots of stories that he tells. And he had an incredible memory for detail. I mean, the ability to remember a story and to take off the various accents, a lot of the English accent stuff that he does within the programme. But he was wonderful at storytelling and taking off people, mimicking accents.
And we've got another clip here of your dad, Gay, from the show. And here he's displaying his ear for Dublin wit.
Oh, yeah.
Overhearing things. Wonderful. A fella told me only last week, he was in the bus going home from work. You know this amazing thing that has started now, that people on mobiles, in buses and on the Dart and on the Lewis, they're talking about the most intimate details of their lives. At the top of their voice, as if nobody... And the whole train is sitting there saying, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This fella is on the phone to a guy who's just obviously breaking the news to him that the bank loan is not coming through. And he's going to go out of business, he's going to have tough times. And he's effing and blinding and coursing, and the fella's on the other end is obviously, don't blame me, I'm only conveying the message, you're not getting the money, that's it. And the fella showers with, and finally he's knocked off the phone and puts his head in his hands. The money is not coming through. And there's an old lady in the seat behind him, and she puts her hand on his shoulder, and she says, I'm sorry for your trouble, son. Is this your first recession?
So good. John, you knew him also personally. You lived quite next door to him.
We lived exactly next door. And I'll tell you, Moy and I were in Spain or China or somewhere, and I got a call from Gay saying, you know the house next door? And I said, yeah. He said, it's up for sale. It hasn't gone up yet, he said, but if you were interested in that, because I had talked to him about wanting to live in Howth, we'd lived in Howth, we'd gone out to Meath. So in any event, he was instrumental in us getting the house next door, and he was thrilled and Kathleen was thrilled. And we had a wooden fence, and in the wooden fence there was a gate between the two properties, and Kathleen called it the bowl of sugar gate. So you could come through if you wanted a bowl of sugar. So that gate was well used over the years. And I think at one of the sort of yearly annual rituals was at Christmas, mm-hmm. and Gay and Kathleen and Susie and Ronan and the kids would come in, and we'd have mince pies and treats, light the fires, have all the lights on all the trees. We'd have brown bread and smoked salmon, and Gay and I would have a little jemmy. And it was just a beautiful ritual. Then I would say to Susie and Ronan, the kids, stand in front of the Christmas tree, which they did, and I took a picture. Those every year, but I don't know how many years, 15
oh,
years
yeah.
or something.
Yes.
Yeah, we did it every year. Mm. And they were the best of neighbours, lovely people to be lived next door to. And I dearly loved Gay, and to this day I still miss him. And not just the Gay the performer, Gay the friend and the supporter. And he was enormously good company privately. You go to dinner with him, go to his house, go to visit. And he was also a great listener. It wasn't just about him performing and telling stories. He was interested in everybody else and what their stories were.
And Susie, as John said, he misses your dad greatly. The whole country mourned him when he died last year. But how are you all doing, and your mom
and
your sister?
We're good, Miriam. Thank you. We have it's been a hard year, but I think we miss him dreadfully. As John said, or his company was fantastic. I mean, we really loved Dad's company and we loved being with him, and he loved being with us, and the grandchildren were massive in his life. And in his later life, he took an interest in sport that he never had. He was never known for sporting interest at all. But in when our kids were born and Cronus, the interest in rugby and sporting activities was huge. So he's been a huge void in our lives. Having said that, we were so lucky. You know, when we look back and we see the last year that has been for so many people, we were able to nurse him. We were able to spend time with him. He was with us every single Sunday out in Howth, and every Christmas, we were with him to the very end. And people have been robbed of that this year, and I think that puts things into perspective for us. He was 85. It was his time, and he realised that in the last 6 months. So we had wonderful times with him. Nothing was left unsaid. So he knew how much he was loved, and we knew how much he adored us, which was great. So although it's hard, it's very sobering what's happened to other people.
And I was chatting to you before we just came into studio, Susie, about how he might have dealt with COVID and everything. And you're actually almost relieved he's not.
I think we've said that so many times, Miriam. We've said that thank God he wasn't here for this, because he was somebody that loved people, loved the radio, loved his audiences, loved just being around people. And I think it would have been horrendous for him. He would have not coped at all with the frustration and the inability to do anything, and not being able to vent his frustrations on the air, because he would have been too sick to do so. So I think it would have been horrendous for him.
And how's your wonderful mum, Kathleen? Busy writing books?
She's wonderful. She's fantastic. She's in great form. She ups and downs like everybody, but she's busy, and she lives for the grandchildren, and she would spend 2 or 3 nights a week out in Howth with us, which is fantastic. And she has a lovely circle of friends that they go to Herbert Park. They now bring their little flasks with them, and they sit each end of the bench, and they chat and they walk. And she's a sunny side of the street person. She's always been very positive. So her attitude is, you know what, I have to get up and get on with it, and I have my cry and I have my bad days, but then put it behind you and move on. And so she's done that. So she's great. Thank God.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's the most extraordinary woman.
She is an extraordinary woman.
She is so to be admired. And she's great company. I mean, she's a great storyteller, and she is a great reader of poetry and great knowledgeable about poetry. And she has fantastic anecdotes and stories about her life on the road with the harp many years ago. And but she loves telling stories, and Gay loved her stories, and she loved Gay's stories. They were really complementary to each other.
What do you think Gay's legacy is a year on John McColgan?
Gay was unique. There has been nobody like him on the broadcasting landscape, with no disrespect to yourself, Miriam, but everything that he achieved between his radio, his television. We did about 4 documentaries. We did 2 on his life. We did 1 on his father's war, which was about his father coming back from World War I. And to work with him, he was so meticulous about the content and the detail. He was so easy to work with.
Well, look, Susie Byrne and John McColgan, thanks so much for coming in this morning. And of course, Gay Byrne Live on Stage is here on RT Radio 1 tomorrow at 5 o'clock. It's wonderful. Everyone should listen to it.